morning, everyone. Thank you so much, worship team. I'm just happy that you guys get to experience the amazing worship team that I get to follow every single week. Dang, they are awesome. So, couple things before we hop into today's message. First off, I want to thank Pastor Dave for giving me the opportunity to speak today. He will be back with us very, very soon. He is taking a much needed break, kind of from some relaxation, some vacation, because we know over this next school year, it's going to be a grind. And so we are excited to have him back soon, but we also are wanting him to rest and be kind of refreshed. So it is back to school weekend. Oh, some of you are dreading that. Students, you're like, they're crying. Just leave them alone. It's fine. So every back to school weekend, we love just to pray over our teachers, over faculty, over students, all those different things. So I'm going to name off a couple different categories. If you fall into any of these categories, we'd love for you just to stand and stay standing because we want to pray for you. If you are a teacher, if you are admin, if you are a support staff, if you work for a school district, anything like that, go ahead and stand up. I know there's a lot of you. So, stay standing. Now my lovely crew over here. If you are a student, whether that's elementary, junior high, high school, college, you're a crazy person and you're going for your master's, whatever it is, go ahead and stand up as well. One or two of them. One or two. I feel like, no, stay standing. I feel like it probably would have been more efficient to have the other people stand up. There's a lot of you guys in this service. So I want to just pray over you guys because we know whether you've started school already, whether you start tomorrow, whatever it is, we know that this school year is going to be difficult, but it also presents us with so many opportunities. For you teachers, for anyone that works with the school system, we know that you have an amazing opportunity day in and day out to be Jesus to every single student that you interact with. And students, we know that you can share your faith in a powerful and amazing way. So we just want to pray over the school year. So would you pray with me real quick? God, I am so grateful for every single person standing in this room, whether they're a teacher, whether they're support staff, admin, whatever it is, or they're a student. God, I pray that this next school year would be the best school year they've ever had. That yes, they would learn a lot, they would further their education, but they would also be closer to you. And they would show Jesus to every single person they interact with, whether it's a fellow student or maybe it's someone in their class, whatever it is, God, that you would be a light on every single campus represented here. God, we love you and we thank you. Amen. Go ahead and grab a seat. Thank you guys so much. So, if you have been with us in this greatest hit series, you have seen our amazing speakers expertly weave a tight connection between their message and the song that they chose. The song and the topic, they fit so well together. If you remember a couple weeks ago when Brent spoke, he had the band play I Won't Back Down, and he tied it into the story of Abraham, and Abraham facing this huge trial and not backing down from his faith in God. And if you were here a couple weekends ago, you heard Lito's mini-series of a message. That was the one you guys skipped lunch for. You got out of here, and you're like, it's Tuesday. What is happening? It's fine. I can make fun of him. He'll never see this. They don't have internet in Kansas. I don't know if you knew that or not. Little known fact. No one even knows where that is. It's in the middle somewhere. Who cares? But he talked about everything we do being based in love and serving those around us and tied it into that song. All that to say, they are much better pastors than I am. I just wanted my team to play Taylor Swift. It's really all it is. If you are expecting a biblical narrative tied in to Shake It Off, you're going to be disappointed this morning, okay? We just wanted to play Taylor Swift with the trumpet section. That's all we wanted today. And I know Taylor Swift, she's been in the news recently. T-Swift, as her friends call her. And we're not here to advocate anything. I know some of you guys are ready to protest her. As soon as she announces, you know, tickets at the Save Mart Center, though, you'll turn your sign around and be like, we love you, sign my face. You know, like, we get it. We're not trying to make any political statements or anything like that. But it is officially back to school weekend. For some of us, tomorrow we return to our routine. Summer is officially over. So sad. Maybe you work for the school system and you go back tomorrow. Maybe it just means you finally get those hellions you call children out of your house for 8 hours a day. Praise Jesus. The end of summer isn't always fun, but returning to routine can provide some normalcy in our life. I personally love routine. I'm big on routine. I take the same exact way to work every single day. I take the same exact way home every single day. Depending on the restaurant, I ordered the exact same meal. Casa Corona, Burrito Real, Chili Verde. It's amazing. It'll take years off your light. I mean, seriously, they bring it out on a plate and you're like, I can't fit that in my body. It's crazy. Like, and you're just like, I don't care. I'm going to be miserable after this. But it's awesome. I love to have my weeks planned out. I love vacations. I took a ton of vacation over this summer, but I also know that routine is where I feel most comfortable. For some of us, though, that routine can feel crippling. It doesn't feel like routine. It feels like monotony. It feels repetitive. It feels like you are stuck in a rut that you cannot escape from. Maybe that routine is in your control, maybe it is outside of your control. Maybe you have a job that you absolutely hate. Maybe you have current life circumstances that you just despise. Maybe you're not crazy about the current state of life that you are in. Today, I want to look at a story found in the book of Acts. It's a small little interaction between three people. And two of these people you might have heard of before. If you haven't, that's okay. Well, I'll give you a little backstory and kind of catch you up on the story of their life. But the other person in this story, we know very little about him. We don't even know his name in the story. We hear a small bit about him. But in this story, there's the man stuck in a routine, and it's not a routine of his own design. It's a routine that he's literally stuck in. And he can't change. But one day, because of one simple interaction with two strangers, it completely changes the trajectory of his life. His routine no longer becomes a rut. His life no longer becomes repetitive. And his life is forever changed. For some of you guys, maybe you're hoping for the same. You know, tomorrow is just maybe another day for you where you head off to a job that you hate. Or you're waking up to a home situation that you didn't imagine yourself in. For others of us, maybe you're not heading off to a job that you hate. For others of us, we're not heading off to a job at all, and that's the problem. We wish that we had a job we could hate. We wish we had a job we could despise, because at least it would be a job. For others of us, we're not waking up to a marriage that is constantly stuck in fighting, because the divorce has finally been finalized and reality has set in. We all have our routines that we are in. Some of those routines we absolutely love. Others of them we despise, and we want to do everything we can to get out of them. So today I want to pick up a story in Acts chapter 3. We're going to start in verse 1, and we're going to read a little bit of passage. I'm going to read some, I'll explain a little bit, and I'll read a little bit more, so we'll be kind of jumping all around a little bit. But we're going to start in Acts chapter 3, starting in verse 1. If you have your Bibles, I'd love for you to follow along. If not, all the verses are going to be up on the screen, so we'll have those for you. So let's start. Acts chapter 3, starting in verse 1, here's what it says. One day, Peter and John were going up to the temple at the time of prayer at 3 in the afternoon. Now, the book of Acts is full of the stories of what happens to the disciples after Jesus has died, after he's gone up to heaven, basically. They're full of incredible stories of these disciples preaching to thousands of people. And because of that, the church is exploding. It's growing like wildfire. The disciples are healing people left and right. But it's also full of stories of the church facing opposition as well. They're having to meet in secret at times. Disciples are being thrown into jail because of their faith. Some of them are even being killed because of their faith. But early on in the book of Acts, everything, it's going well. There's some small obstacles here and there, but for the most part, nothing too crazy. But we pick up the story with Peter and John. Now, Peter and John are just rolling into the temple one day, but they have a storied history up until this point, up in the other books of the Bible, the Gospels. Now, Peter and John were part of the disciples, part of the 12 disciples. These were 12 followers that followed after Jesus every single place that he went. They were there from the beginning. But not only were they part of the 12, they were actually part of what we call the inner three. So Peter, James, and John. So James isn't in this story, but Peter and John are. These three got to experience even things the other disciples didn't get to experience. They were with Jesus everywhere they went. There's this one story that happens in the gospel that one day Peter, James, John, and Jesus, they go up to this mountaintop and they are greeted by the spirit and the ghost of Elijah and Moses. And it's just this crazy story where they see God's power in its full glory, all these crazy things. All this to say, they experience things that no one else gets to see. They are rock stars of the faith, and they have followed after Jesus with everything that they have. But if you know the story of Peter and John, you also know that there are countless mistakes in their story as well. Peter's are well documented in the Bible. Denying Jesus, lying about even knowing who he is, saying things that he would later regret. John's aren't as obvious, but they're in there as well. John can be a little arrogant. He can be one of those people that wants a little more of the spotlight than he probably deserves. And if we're being honest, you and I can probably relate to that, of wanting more of that spotlight. But these men are going around city to city, preaching about who Jesus is, urging people to follow after him. And they go into the temple one day, and they have this chance encounter with a complete stranger. Let's keep reading. Here's what it says. It says, now a man who was lame from birth. So this is Bible talk for saying that he was paralyzed. So he couldn't walk, he couldn't do anything. We don't know if he was paralyzed from the waist down, from the neck down. We're not 100% sure. And it says he was paralyzed from birth. So this wasn't an accident that happened one day. This wasn't it wasn't a sickness or a disease or anything like that. He was literally born this way. It says, now a man who was lame from birth was being carried to the temple gate called Beautiful, where he was put every day to beg from those going into the temple courts. When he saw Peter and John about to enter, he asked them for money. So we are introduced to this man that we know very little about. We know that he cannot walk, and we know that he has been like that since birth. So if we keep reading in Acts chapter 4, we find out a little bit more of this information. The Bible does this really funny thing where it kind of dances around some topics every once in a while. It's my favorite. And the Bible literally says that this man is, I'm quoting this, over 40 years old. He could be 41, he could be 141. We have no stinking idea. I feel like this is what you and I should do when we want to stop lying about our age. You know, because we all have that friend that's like, okay, look, listen, Sandra, you've celebrated your 39th birthday 10 years in a row, all right? You're lying to yourself. So now just say, I'm over 10 years old. Do with that what you want. So we have no idea how old this guy is. We just know he's over 40. After that, we don't really know. But we are given the scene of a man that is sitting just outside the temple. Now, he's sitting just outside the temple because of his disability. Now, I want to set the scene for you a little bit, but everything I'm about to say, I'm not condoning any of this. I'm just trying to paint you a picture of what it was like back in this culture. He is sitting outside the temple courts because he was not allowed to go into certain parts of the temple because of his disability. It's not that he just couldn't walk to it or anything like that. He was literally not allowed. If you had a physical disability, if you had a mental disability, there were certain areas you could not go to. In the same way, there were certain areas in the temple that you could not go to if you were a woman. You could go a little further, but there's just certain areas that you had to go to. This is all a very segregated part of the world, very segregated part in the temple. So, since he has been disabled from birth, he has never stepped foot into the temple. Never, not a single time, because of his disability. So he is sitting just outside the temple. And like most people who are begging for money, he wants to be where the people are. So thousands of people are coming in and going out every single day. People going to worship, people coming from worship. I want you to imagine like a mall the weekend before Christmas. You know what I mean? Where you're cursing at people in the parking lot and you're getting all wild and amped up. But it's one of those things where it's shoulder to shoulder. You're squeezing by, you're bumping into people. It is absolutely packed in there. And we are introduced to this man that cannot walk, that has never walked. People have carried him to the temple gates every day of his life for at least 40 years.
thousands upon thousands of times has he been carried to the temple gates, not allowed to go any further, hoping to get some money, hoping to get some food, hoping that the routine of his life would change. Every morning he would wake up hoping that today would be different than the last. And every night when he went to bed, he realized it wasn't. It was always the same. His routine would never be broken. His life would never be changed. But this day would be different. Because he wouldn't just be asking anybody for money. He wouldn't be ignored on this day like he was for every other day. This day would be different. Not because someone would give him some huge amount of money, not because someone would feel sorry for him, but this is the day that he would break out of his routine forever. Let's keep reading. Here's what it says. Peter looked straight at him, as did John. Peter said, "Look at us." So the man gave them his attention, expecting to get something from them. So this man catches the attention of Peter and John. Through all the craziness, through all the noise, through all the people, through all the stuff happening, the man catches their attention. I love how Peter says right here, "Look at us." It's one of those things where, and if anyone ever says that to you, you know, like the next thing they say is going to be like super important. You know what I mean? They want to have all of his attention. I do this all the time with my 4-year-old daughter. So she can be very, very fidgety. So when I need to like get her attention, when I need to go tell her to clean her room, I'll have her come up to me. And I'll say, "Look at me and fold your hands." And she'll go, and just like stare right at me. Because I don't know if you've noticed how much I talk with my hands. She does the exact same thing. "I can't stop, please help me," okay? Like she does the exact same thing. So she's super fidgety because I know I want her full attention. She's been doing this new thing where she takes her hair and then she just like chews on her hair. I throw up in my mouth every time I see her do it. Like it's absolutely disgusting. Like obviously I can't chew on my hair. That would be very impressive, actually. Like, but I can't judge her too much because I have a habit that I get made fun of a lot for. I chew on straws. Does anyone else chew on straws? Oh, everyone else is judging us in this room. That's totally fine. All of you guys are like, "I'm silently judging you right now." The dentists in here are freaking out. I chew on, and I'm not just talking like I'm at a restaurant and I'll take a little sip of my soda and a little nibble. I will chew on straws for hours on end. I had a straw this morning. It was a breakfast straw. It was delicious. Don't judge me, all right? Like, I will chew on them for so long, my teeth will start to hurt because I'm chewing on plastic. It's going to be a dark day in this world when we convert all the way over to paper straws, okay? I get we need to save the turtles, but come on, all right? There's got to be a different way. Scientists, figure it out. Do we care about the turtles that much? I know some of you are like, "Oh my, it's a pet. It's fine. Don't worry about it. You can't eat them. Can you? I don't know. Anyways, it's fine. It's fine." We should probably get back to the story. Anyways, okay, so we... Here's where we're at. We know that they are wanting his full attention right here. They want him to look at them in the eye. They are wanting him to focus in because they know that this interaction could change his life. But I think they also know how often this man has been ignored. Because we do the same, right? Think about it. Last time you were at a stoplight and there was someone next to your car begging for money, what'd you do? She stared straight ahead, right? Don't make eye contact. Don't look over. Or someone was sitting on the street begging for money. What'd you do? You pulled out your phone. You stared at the ground. You stared straight ahead. Whatever you do, don't make eye contact with them. You think it was any different thousands of years ago? How often did those same people that went to the temple every single day see the same man there begging for money and food every single day? They ignored him. They avoided him. They took the long way around him just so they wouldn't have to see this person begging for money and food like he was the day before. "I'm just here to worship," they would begin to justify to themselves. I just want to offer my sacrifice and be on my way. I give my 10% to the temple. I just don't want to be bothered. But they would do everything they can to ignore him. But Peter and John chose to be different. Not just to acknowledge him as a person, but to acknowledge the needs that this man had. Let's read a little bit more, and we're going to finish up the story, and we'll kind of unpack it a little bit. Here's what it says. Then Peter said, "Silver or gold I do not have, but what I do have I give you. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, walk." Taking him by the right hand, he helped him up, and instantly the man's feet and ankles became strong. He jumped to his feet and began to walk. Then he went with them into the temple courts, a place he has never gone before, walking and jumping and praising God. When all the people saw him walking and praising God, they recognized him as the same man who used to sit begging at the temple gate called Beautiful. And they were filled with wonder and amazement as to what had happened to him. While the man held on to Peter and John, all the people were astonished and came running to them in the place called Solomon's Colonnade. So you and I, we read this story, and I often think about the power of God, the power that God gave these special men. I think of how truly powerful he is, but I think there could be something more that we can learn from this story. Can it teach us about God's power? Of course it can. But I think it also can teach us about ourselves. And I think it can teach us how to interact with others as well. Because let's be real for a minute. You and I probably aren't going to go around healing a lot of people today. We're not going to be helping blind people see or deaf people hear. Is it possible through the power of God? Of course it is. But let's be real for a minute. Is it likely? Probably not. So what can we learn from this story if it's not just about healing people? In this quick little story, Peter and John do three things that absolutely blow me away. Three small little things that I think you and I can replicate, that you and I can do today, tomorrow, this week, this month. I think we can actually replicate a lot of the parts in this story, even if we're not able to replicate the actual healing. First thing Peter and John do that absolutely blow me away, it's your first fill-in. They don't focus on what they can't provide. There's a little double negative for you. All the teachers are like, please stop. My ears are bleeding. I love double negatives. And there's a reason I put it in there. Peter and John could have just said to him, "Sorry, we don't have any money. Sorry," and just moved on with their day. Because let's be real, they probably didn't have any money. Most disciples had absolutely no money. Whenever they got money, they would freely give it away. They would share with all the people around them. But you see what they did? They actually saw past the need of what he was actually asking for. They saw to the core of what this man was truly asking. They're saying to themselves, the thing you keep asking for money, that's not actually what you need. The thing you keep begging people for money or for food, that's not actually the thing you want or need. You want to walk. You want to run. You want to break out of this rut. You want to break out of this routine. You want to break out of this life that feels the same every single day. And what they're saying right here is Jesus can provide that. Not Peter, not John. It says right in that passage that Peter basically says, through the power of Jesus is the only way this is possible. Trying to take all the spotlight off of him because he knows this isn't his own power. This is the power from above. But Peter says, what I do have, I give you. He doesn't have money, he doesn't have gold, but he also doesn't focus on the things that he doesn't have. Peter focuses and freely gives the thing that he does have. You and I hear about others' needs and wants, and we immediately begin to think, man, I can't do that. I can't provide that. Oh, I definitely can't provide that. I don't know how to do that. So often I meet with volunteers, with small group leaders that are serving in junior high and high school, and they'll say to me things along the lines of, I don't know the Bible well enough. I'm just doing all this faith stuff just like the students are. My life is too messed up. I've made too many mistakes. And every time they say that, I try to encourage them about not thinking about the things they can't provide, but what are the things you can provide? Can you give time to these students? Can you give love to these students? Can you listen to these students? Can you challenge and encourage these students? Oftentimes, you and I hear about a need of someone else, and we begin to list a reasons of all the things we can't do, reasons we can't help, instead of the qualities that we can give, instead of focusing on the things that we actually can bring to the table. Peter and John don't focus on the things they can't provide. They focus on the things that they can give. Second thing that Peter and John do, the second fill in there, they helped the man up. Notice that it says in that passage that they extended a hand. They didn't just yell at him to get up. They didn't just condemn him for not having enough faith to stand up. They didn't look down on him because he wasn't able to walk. No, it says that Peter extended a hand and helped him up. He actually did something to help someone else. Look, praying for people is great. I never want to discount that. I never want to undersell that. If anything, we need to be praying more often for people. But far too often, we settle for words over actions. We just pray for someone and then we stop. We don't do anything. If your prayers are stopping at prayers, then that's not enough. Our prayers need to lead to action. Do we care to help those around us? Do we give compassion to others, or do we withhold it? There are so many things in life that are holding us back from giving that compassion to other people. The list can go on and on. There's a couple major ones. I think, oddly enough, I think pride is a big one. Here's what I mean by that. Have you ever seen someone, maybe they're asking for help, and you think to yourself, they're not going to change. And as soon as you start thinking that way, what happens is you hope that they don't change so that you can be proven right. So you can sit back a couple years down the road, see, told you they wouldn't be able to change. I told you that 5 years ago that they wouldn't change. I told you. And we care more about being proven right than actually helping people around us. Laziness can also infect that way of helping other people. I don't have time for this. I don't have money. I don't have energy. It's going to cost me too much. I'm just not interested. Sometimes I think we just don't like the people around us. It's really easy to give grace and love to those people we like, right? To those people who are similar to us. What about the person that's different from you? A person that disagrees with you? A person that looks differently from you. A person that votes differently from you. How often have you seen a senator that you've never heard of on the TV, but they have his name and they've got a little D or a little R next to him, and because of that one little letter, you're like, I don't like him. You didn't know his name 5 seconds ago, and you don't like him now? Oh yeah, those Democrats, those Republicans. How often does that happen? Is that holding us back from actually giving help and love to other people? We're all about compassion to those who are like us, or those who think like us, or maybe those who are already trying to improve their lives. But what about those who are down on their luck? You know, Jesus only helps those who help themselves. Good luck finding that in the Bible. Have fun. It's not in there. In fact, the Bible teaches the opposite of that. Galatians 6:2 says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. It doesn't go on to say carry each other's burdens as long as the other person is pulling their own weight, as long as the other person is pulling themselves up by their bootstraps. And you and I might not say that phrase, but we think that phrase. Who are those people around you that need your help? Who are those people around you that you need to extend a hand to help them up? Maybe giving them financial help. Maybe giving them emotional support or spiritual support. How can you begin to be invested in the lives of those around you? Peter and John extend a hand and they help him up. Their words lead to action. Third thing that they do. They support him even after he is healed. I read this part, but it's really, really, really easy to miss. It says that as they are in the temple, that this man, even though he's been healed, even though he's able to walk, that he is hanging on to Peter and John. They are still propping him up. He's been healed, but he still needs their support. And Peter and John are committed to be there for the long haul. They don't just heal him and leave him to figure it out on his own. They stay with him and they support him. They encourage him. They are literally holding him up because they know he cannot go on this new journey alone. Think about it. He has never walked before. Yes, it says that his ankles and his feet became strong, but he's never done this before. He doesn't know how to put one foot in front of the other. And so, yes, he's walking and jumping, but this is a brand new journey for him. In his 40-plus years of life, he's never taken a step a single time, and now he's just supposed to have it all figured out? No, they're there to hold him up because they know that this journey needs support. And we need to do the same to help other people up. How often have we heard about someone getting baptized? How often have we heard about someone giving their life over to Jesus and trying to follow after him? How often have we heard about someone that is trying to get their life together, and as soon as they're trying to do that, we think they should have it all figured out. You're a follower of Jesus now, so you should do this, this, and this. You're a follower of Jesus now, so you definitely shouldn't do that, and you definitely shouldn't do this. And the new believer is sitting there thinking, says who? I just became a Christian a week ago. I'm supposed to know all this stuff? What are you talking about? I need help. I need support. We need to be there for the long haul, supporting them for weeks, months, or years down the road, investing in their lives. For some of you, maybe it's time to say yes to investing in the life of a young person. Maybe it's time for you to say yes to sponsoring a child in India. Maybe it's time for you to say yes to serving at this church. Because I fully believe every single person in this room knows the value of investing in someone's life. You know the value for one of two reasons. That first group, you know the value of someone investing in someone else's life because you had that person. Through some tough junior high years or high school years or college, maybe it's a sickness, maybe you got laid off. Maybe it was a divorce, and you had that person with you every step of the way. That friend that you could just call, that mentor that you could vent to, that you could cry to, that they would encourage you and pray for you and check in on you. And you look back on that time and you say, man, I cannot imagine getting through that time of my life without that person. I just couldn't do it. For others of you, you know the value of that person because you never had that person. That divorce hit, and you had no one. You got blindsided and got fired, and you had no one to turn to. Your high school years, you had so many questions, you were so lost, and you would have given anything to have another person. And say, please help me. I just need someone to talk to. Every single one of us knows the value of someone investing in their life because either they had it or they didn't have it. A couple weeks ago, some of our high school students went to India with a big group. You actually saw some of them today, even if you didn't realize it. A lot of them that are leading in worship today were over in India just a couple weeks ago. And when they got back, one of my students, McKenna, she's actually right there. I'll embarrass her later, it's fine. She told me this story. Go ahead and put that picture up. So this is McKenna. And this little girl's name is Usha. Usha is 8 years old, and she has cerebral palsy. She can't walk. So Usha is at a place called the Oasis of Love. It's a place that takes in students and children around India that have disabilities. And they love them, and they support them. One of the first days that McKenna was there, she met Usha and just fell in love with her. Usha would kind of crawl around on her hands and knees, just hoping that someone would pick her up, hoping someone would cuddle her, hoping someone would play with her and hold her. And McKenna absolutely fell in love with this girl. McKenna told me one of the first days she met her, she wanted to take her home with her. It's not possible, obviously. So McKenna decided to do something different. When McKenna got back, she talked to her parents. And she said, hey, I really want to support Usha. I want to send her money every single month. But I kind of need some help. How about I pay half and you guys pay half. And if you don't know McKenna's parents, McKenna has the most amazing parents in the world. So of course, they said yes. And it was only a couple days after she got back that they started sponsoring Usha and sending her money and writing letters to her and investing in her life. McKenna could have just gone to India and that'd be the end of the story. And we all would have all applauded. Oh, that's great that you spent a couple weeks helping those people around the world. Oh, that's awesome. But McKenna decided to do something different. She decided to be there for this girl for the long haul. When she was in the country, she allowed her to hold on to her. She would prop her up and she would take her everywhere and she would support her as much as she could. Now that she's out of the country, she's still doing the same. McKenna is 17 years old. No one is forcing her to do this. She doesn't want the spotlight. A lot of times when I'll use someone else's story in a sermon, I'll ask their permission. Say, hey, I think this would be a great sermon illustration. Would you allow me to use this story? I know McKenna well enough that I didn't ask her because I knew that she would tell me no because she doesn't want the spotlight. So I shot her a text earlier in the week. I said, hey, I'm gonna use that story. Sorry, sucks for you. Because I know she would have said no because she doesn't want the spotlight. But I go back to that question, what 17-year-old does that? You know what 17-year-old does that? One that's following after Jesus. One that's following after Jesus even when it's not convenient, even when it's not easy. She is following after Jesus for the long haul, following after him with everything that she has. Are you ready to do the same? Are you ready to give grace to those people around you? How are you showing God's love to every single person around you? Are you ready to embrace the skills and passions that God has given you? Or are you focusing on all the things that you can't do? Are you ready to extend a hand to someone and help them up? Or are you just gonna let them stay in their rut and their routine? Are you ready to invest in someone's life for the long haul? Or are you just gonna keep staying on the sidelines? Every single one of us has a choice. For a lot of us, maybe we're not following after Jesus. But here's what you need to know, that Jesus was left with that same choice. He was left with that same choice to allow us to stay in our rut, stay in our routine, stay in our sin, stay in all this junk that we have in our life. And he could have stayed up in heaven and say, well, you figure it out. Good luck. And not extend a hand. But he not only extended a hand, he did something different. He sacrificed everything he had for you and for me. Because he did not want us to stay in our rut. He did not want us to stay in our sin. He did not want us to stay in our routine. And he's saying, I'm ready to do something about it. I'm ready to extend a hand and help you up. And even after I've healed you, even after I've given you grace, even after I've given you love, I'm gonna stay with you every step of the way because I'm here for the long haul. There's gonna be times that you're gonna have to lean on me. There's gonna be times that I'm going to literally carry you. But guess what? I am never leaving because I am here to prop you up because this new journey is scary and frightening. I know, but I'll be with you every step of the way. Jesus said, I'm not gonna let you stay in that rut. And he extended a hand and helped every single one of us up. For a lot of you, you know that. You know the life that you have left behind because of what Jesus did. And you know that there have been so many times that you have had to lean on him through all the tough trials. But at this point, you're now left with a choice. Do you give that same grace and love to those people around you? Or you just keep all that to yourself? God, thank you so much that you saved me. God, thank you so much for your grace and love. But I'm not gonna give it to other people. This is just for me. And so many times we see someone sitting in a rut, sitting in their routine, sitting in their junk, sitting in their sin, and we walk on by, never stopping to make eye contact, never stopping to extend a hand, and certainly never stopping to say, I will be with you for the long haul. That needs to change. We all know the value of investing in someone else's life because we had that person or we didn't have that person. Either way, it's valuable. So right now, we're gonna go into one last song, and we're gonna have pastors and leaders up here. Maybe it's time for you to accept that gift that God's given. Maybe it's time for you to embrace that love and grace that he's given every single one of us. He has extended a hand for so long. It's time for us to reach out and grab that hand and say, God, I'm ready to give my life over to you. For others of us, maybe it's time that we say, I need to invest in some people's life. Maybe I don't know who that person is. Maybe you know exactly who that person is that you've been ignoring, you've been putting off, and you're saying, I'm ready to be there for the long haul. Maybe you just need prayer because you're going through a tough time and you don't have anyone. If you fall into any of those categories, we'd love just to invite you down to the front so you can pray with leaders. Let's stand and let's sing.